Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the Comic Chronicle Podcast. I'm your guys' host, Dakota Morgan, coming from Phoenix, Arizona. We have a really good, informative episode today. Tom Hutchison is on the show. Indie comic book creator and hustler of his own comic company, too. Big Dog, Inc. Big Dog, BDI. Look him up. Really awesome. Tom is on the show today. He's a good friend of mine for almost 3-4 years at this point, maybe longer. He got me to where I am today. I said it in the beginning of the show, but I'm going to say it here again. I am here because of Tom Hutchison. We talk making comics, you know, hustling your own comics and maybe working for an indie company as well. Maybe starting up your own. This is a really informative thing for indie comic book creators. Really fun in creative endeavor too. Fair warning, in this episode, we had a car alarm go off outside the studio because I went to Tom to actually record this. So we hung out in his studio for a little bit with all his comic books around. It was really fun. So there was a car alarm that went off. We handled it. I cut out a little bit of that too. I left a few little jokes in there, you know. So hopefully you guys enjoy this episode. And if you like, subscribe on whatever you guys are listening on. We're on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, comiccronicle.podbean.com. Subscribe, folks. And if you can, leave us a review. It's awesome. Maybe you get your review shown here on the show. Or not shown, but read here on the show. You know what I'm talking about. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. And if you want to follow me, as I said on the show, at DakotaMorgan3 on Twitter. And also at Dakota_Morgan97 on Instagram. May or may not have had a beer during this recording. Well, on the intro. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. And now that this spiel's over with, here is my interview with Tom Hutchison. Alrighty, so we're recording. If you ever listen to the show,
yep.
You know we don't do an intro sort of thing. We kind of just roll into it.
Dive in.
Like, take out this in the beginning if we wanted to.
Yep.
Man, I got to say,
yeah,
it took too damn long to bring you on this show.
We've only been talking about it for like, what, 3 years?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. The feel shit-o-meter is an all-time high right now, man. I mean, first off, welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you. It's
so deserved because without you, I would not be here where I am right now with all this.
No, how do you figure that?
Because I was just this dweeb of a Marvel DC guy. That was it. That's all I was. That's all I, because that's all I grew up on. I grew up hearing about indie books. I don't think Hellboy counts as indie anymore. Does it?
Who knows anymore? Who knows what indie is anymore?
That's true.
It's all comics.
It's true.
At least that's the way it should be.
Yeah. Yeah. But you got me into other books other than Marvel and DC.
Okay.
Such a la Paper Girls, mm-hmm. a la, you know, Godzilla books. There's so many other things that you started years ago now.
Yeah. Okay.
And without that, I wouldn't have been able to dive into this world of doing, we'll say, indie for this, for
sure,
the show sort of thing.
Yeah.
You know, we'll say like other people other than outside of Marvel and DC, you got me into those folks. And then that made me put other people on the show, you know, people outside Marvel and DC. And then that introduced me to people who now I work for SGGS Comics. So I work for them as a comic book writer now,
yeah.
You know. I've taken a lot of cues from you, by the way, with
okay.
that.
Okay, all right.
And so, and doing the stuff with the show and the places the show's gone. So without you right here, right now, Tom, there would be no podcast. There would be no writing the show. But still probably doing film.
So I think you need to rename the podcast to the, you know, Tom Hutchison Memorial. No, I'm still here. So not Memorial.
Tom, the memorial to you. Like,
Tom Hutchison Celebrational Podcast of Comics. Something like that.
Yeah.
Just something to think about. You can shorten it somehow.
Yeah, we could. I mean, we could do that. We could. I don't know. Like, dude, I'm also looking at this right now, and I hope to God it's recording. There we go. Yeah, I'll edit it later. this is the point of the show. Like, this show is so laid back and so uncensored, and just, like I said, we can say whatever the hell you want.
All right.
Like, we've had fun instances where I'm not going to get on that. But, so this is all here because of it. So I'll make it your memorial when you pass, whenever that
sure,
is.
Sure,
like, 30 years from
yeah,
now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
30, 40 years.
You'll still be here, but
yeah. I hope. Many will disagree with you. Fans of the show will definitely disagree with you. But I don't know. It's just so crazy to me with everything going on at the moment that you do. I don't know. How do you do it? Like, how do you balance everything?
Well, I don't. There's nothing for me to balance, honestly. Because
really?
It's been a roller coaster in the last few years. Because those that know me had the divorce. We went over to Aspen. They were publishing mm-hmm. us for a while. So there's been a lot of, like, roller coaster things happening. But ultimately, especially now and within the last, let's say, 2 years since we've been doing Kickstarters, that's basically been what I do. Like, there's no 9-to-5 job. There's no 20 shows a year anymore. You know, the shows are reduced to like maybe 5. So really what I do is write, create, edit, publish, you know, do the Kickstarters, all that kind of stuff. So there's not as much balance as there used to be, because in the old days when I was still married, you had quote unquote life.
Yeah.
You know, you had that side of it. You know, you went to work, she went to work, I went to work, you know, did my writing, and then she came home, and you had the domestic life. So there's your balance. You know, are we going to do something on the weekend? Now it's like every day is just a day for me. It's I don't know if it's Tuesday or Saturday. It doesn't matter, because I'm just doing kind of the same thing.
It sounds kind of freedom.
It is. Yeah. It is freedom, because it's you can create whenever you want to create, whenever you feel like it. At 2 in the morning and something strikes you, you don't have to worry about waking somebody up. You don't have to worry about being at work the next day in the morning. Mm. You just get up and you do it. So it is freedom, but at the same time, it is also constant, because if you stop as a creator, if you stop, that means that you are not producing product, which is what you need to sell to continue to maintain what you're doing. It is a cycle. So there's less balance for me as far as like work and life, or whatever you want to call it. But it is something that you have to be consistently doing. Or you lose it. You lose that opportunity and that freedom.
That's, you put it perfectly on that. I mean, it's such a weird thing these days that you don't really get that much of freedom. Like, there's so many creators that I know, and that you probably know too, that they don't get as much time that they need, to say the least. I'm kind of in that realm right now, but I balance things between different jobs, you know, the film, comics, podcasts, all the different stuff like that. It all takes a certain amount of, and day jobs still help pay the bills.
Yeah, exactly.
It's, which I don't know how long it'll last, but that's a whole different subject. But, you know, that itself sounds like you're really living the dream at the moment here.
Well, I've heard that before.
I mean, oh, yeah, but it's a cliche thing to fucking say. I know that. But
it is, I mean, I guess it is the dream. I mean, the idea that you can make something that pays your bills is the basic dream. You know, I'm making comics or movies or whatever it is you're doing. I'm creating, and that's what's paying my bills, versus I got to go to my office job, or I got to, you know, whatever it is. That so I get it. That is, there is truth in that. But you have to, this is where it also gets cliche, because you've got like this guy, who's the guy that does the, I'm blanking on this whole thing. Who is the guy who does the current Family Feud? You know who I'm talking about.
Steve Harvey did
a little speech once about you have to jump, and I'm going to totally paraphrase the whole thing, but the idea is that if you have a dream, whatever it happens to be, you have to take the jump. You have to jump off of the cliff in order to make the dream happen, because the dream is your parachute, and at some point on the way down, if you are working on it, the parachute will open. It might not be in one day, it might not be in 1 week, it might not be in 1 year, but you have to take the jump if you want the dream parachute to open. And if you don't take the jump, you will never be putting enough energy into whatever it is for the parachute to open. It will always be, and this leads back to something I just saw yesterday, which is Arnold Schwarzenegger saying,
what?
Yes, I'm all over the place, saying plan B is BS. Because if you have a plan B, it means you're putting energy into plan B that you could have been putting into plan A.
There's a sex joke there, but I'm going to ignore that.
Yes.
But that's true. I so really think that.
Everything is energy. Everything is effort. Everything is, what do you want? And what are you willing to do to get it?
Yeah.
That's it. I mean, that's really it. Now, in the creative world, there's something else that you need, which is a product that somebody cares about. And that's almost the hardest part, because you never know what somebody wants. Like yourself, you started off just being the Marvel zombie and the DC guy and whatever.
Yeah.
And we all did. That's where we all came from. So in that realm, guys like, what did you mention? Paper Girls. So that's Vaughn, Stephen K. Vaughn.
Yep.
How does he get you to read his books? He almost doesn't. It almost takes something else. It took somebody else to say, hey, dude, Dakota, look at this book.
That's it. Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah.
So he, all he could do essentially was create it. And it had to land in someone else's hands before it then got handed into your hands. So the indie side of things, especially in comics, is very, very tricky because in comics, you have basically the retail store to sell at where you have zero control over what somebody buys or how it's presented. So it's just kind of a crapshoot. You know, we're in Diamond, some store bought it, they put it on their shelf.
Don't know what happens.
We don't know what happens. Exactly. No, we literally don't know what happens because there's no sales records of that stuff.
No.
It just is into the mist. All we know is that the next issue got X amount of sales based on X amount for the first issue.
Yeah.
That is literally all we know as far as like where sales go. And so that's why people do Comic-Cons, which means it's still the same thing because you still have the Marvel Zombies walking through the aisles and you still have to go, dude, here's my book.
Mm-hmm. They're like almost, what the hell is
this? You almost got to like hand it off like a football and be like, go to the end zone. Here's my comic book.
You're like the guys at Vegas who hand out like the stripper
Correct.
Cards. Boom, boom, boom. 100%. No? All right. But a boom. Here you go. Like,
that's right.
That's right. You're not
100 people are going to walk by, but you get the one that takes them.
Yeah.
And
at least one.
Yeah. And you hope that those guys dig what they're seeing and you know, come back for more.
That's true.
And that's it.
We're stripper cards.
That's correct. We are stripper cards. Some more than others.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. There's some people who are really tough on that. And I never really looked upon it that way. I think I should. So you give me this knowledge for later on when, because my books are coming to Diamond.
Yeah.
So that's this whole 2020 thing of that, those emails and meetings and stuff like that over that stuff. It's been surreal to me as a Midwestern kid who's only like almost 23 now to be able to do all this sort of shit. And I'm like, oh, well, there's the Diamond you got to do. Like, what? I've only heard about this sort of thing before. And now this world that I'm entering in with it, I love it with a passion. Do you ever do Comic-Cons that much? Or do you?
Almost no anymore. When we started, we were doing like 20 a year.
Jesus Christ.
Like, we were everywhere. Like, everywhere. It was ridiculous. Like, I was living in California. We were doing Baltimore. We were doing North Carolina. We were doing Florida.
Hmm.
I mean, it was brutal. Because we only had like one issue. Like, one issue.
That's you have one issue and you're going to Comic-Cons.
And we're going to Comic-Cons. You know, how do you do that, right? But had we not done it, had we not kind of eaten shit early on, we would not have had those connections of people who did buy the book. We would have been complete unknowns to that entire seaboard by the time we got to Oz and Ursa Minor and the other books that came later. But Penny and Critter, when we started... We put them out there. We were in Diamond, you know, right from the beginning. We were with Diamond. We sold out A Penny for Your Soul, the first issue, like that. We went to a second print, and then we started doing shows. We were in California. We did California West Coast shows, and then we were like, well, I know these shows are good, so let's go out there. Mm-hmm. And we had zero chance of making our money back, zero, because you can't make your money back selling, you know, $3 comic books when your expense for the trip is, you know, $1,000.
Yeah,
it's zero. But
Comic-Con can be pricey.
Yeah. Hello. So you have to treat it as a marketing expense, basically, these Comic-Cons.
Yeah.
And who is not taking care of their car?
I think someone may be their car is being broken into at the moment.
That would be interesting. We could be superheroes on a comic book
show. Yeah, we could. Fans is what happens sometimes. Hey folks, Dakota here, and do you guys like Dungeons & Dragons as much as I do? Because if so, you're gonna like Adventures in Green and Garb. You know, they're a really fun new group on YouTube, their whole D&D campaign group, but let me tell you what they're all about. Adventures in Green and Garb started as most D&D campaigns do, around their parents' dinner table. Last year, they decided to bring it to YouTube, though, with the addition of costumes and green screens. Come on, that's adds some really cool flavor right there. Still in the family, their Season 1 campaign is nearing its exciting conclusion, with many mysteries yet to be revealed. They hope you enjoy it as much as they love making it, and playing, doing so much with D&D. So smash that like button, subscribe, and share, and look for them at this year's Gen Con. So I'm extremely excited to have these guys a part of the Comic Chronicle and Film World podcast, you know, to partner up and all that such, because they're truly wonderful people, and you guys should go subscribe and support them and give them a like. They're really, really fun. And because we've been playing throughout the commercial, I'm going to play you guys the theme that they have. The first time you're listening to this, you're going to want to go subscribe. And then we'll get right back to the podcast. Thanks, everyone.
Let us roll you a tale where heroes prevail as we wander the blight, prepared for the fight. On the edge of the world, claiming almighty glory, in spite of the cost, love and loss frame our story. We won't turn back now, bloodied by dragons made gory. We roll this tale for you. Banded by fate, oblivion beware, watch as great fires whirl, lightning cracking the air, olden powers unleash, together taming the beast. We roll this tale for you, roll for you.
Come then chat along, ye daring hearts, stoned and strong, be not afraid, douse your doubts and join the fray.
Moving on, don't quit, greening up one forfeit. Don't look back, stay alive, smite them, survive. Keep moving on, don't quit, greening up one forfeit. Don't look back, stay alive, smite them, survive. Steadfast and true, we surrender our lives to defend all the realm till that good day arrives. When we lay down our swords, bodies scarred and bruised, having rolled a tale for you. On the edge of the world, claiming almighty glory, in spite of the cost, love and loss frame our story. We won't turn back now, bloodied by dragons made gory. We roll this tale for you, roll for you.
All right, and that's over with.
And over with. So you have to treat Comic Cons as a marketing expense. Now, if you can find a way to make money, if you can find a way to make a profit, more power to you. That's great. And I'm not saying that you can't profit at Comic-Cons, because you can't. But especially when you're starting out and you've got one or two issues of a thing on your table, you're not making your table back. I mean, it's going to be almost impossible. If you're selling a $3 comic and your table costs $300, you have to sell 100 comics.
Jesus.
Just basic math.
And it's not something easy to sell either. It's not like you're working at Dunkin' Donuts, like, try this donut, you fat fuck. Like, well, no, I can't really do, like, I am that because I am that guy who buys the donuts.
Yeah.
But.
And you're not selling Batman.
No, it's one of the, how do you sell your own product like that?
Yep.
Like, what was one indie book I was, I say indie, and I know it's cliche, but there's a book out there, and I'm drawing a blank on a name, but I bought every trade paperback of it because it was so good.
Sure.
DMZ.
Okay.
How do you sell that? You know, because if you're someone from the southern states in that story, did you ever read that story?
I know what it is, but I've never read it.
So prolific. I've never, it's the only time.
But that had the advantage of Vertigo, too.
Oh, that's also true.
So it's not really indie. It is, but it isn't.
Yeah.
It was a Vertigo book.
Well, Vertigo is sometimes tough to sell.
Very true. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. There's
plenty of Vertigo books that didn't sell well.
And it's proven now, because now Vertigo closed its doors.
Yeah.
Which I cried. I was like, the hell, internally, really.
Yeah.
But I was like, why? You know, you had Sandman there, which got popular, and now they're doing all that stuff with. I mean, it's probably because we all have a crush on Death, but besides that, we all want to date her. But then we also had DMZ. We had so many other books from Vertigo out there.
Oh, yeah. Well, you had American Vampire.
American Vampire. And yeah. That's like
Tons of old Vertigo stuff from when it started in the 90s, too.
Yeah.
But and it was basically, that was DC's indie.
Yeah, that's true.
That's what it was. Now, it had name creators, Neil Gaiman or whatever, but essentially these were indie books because they were not superhero books.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where we are. The industry is kind of like mainstream is superhero and everything else is indie. But really, there's far more indie books on the market than there are superhero books. Like, by far.
Oh, yeah.
By far.
Hundreds. More.
But the places like Newsarama and Comic Book Shopping, Comic Book Resources.
Yeah, I almost worked for them at one point.
All of
those
places really don't focus on the indie market. They just are like, hey, Scott Snyder's writing Batman, and now he's writing Green Lantern, and now he's writing, It's just like, yeah, we got that. What's Scout Comics doing? Tell us about Scout Comics. Tell us about Vault. Tell us about
Vault's good.
Aspen. Tell us about whatever. You know, but so much of the market just won't focus on indies unless it's a name creator. You know, but even then, it's usually Image. So that's really mainstream, even though it's all a collection of essentially indie stuff. it's mainstream easy, because it's Image.
I want to say easy grasping stuff too. Yes. Because there's the one book, and you know them too, Zombie Tramp.
Sure.
You know, people are like, oh, automatically sold on that because the name right there. So unless it's something that really, really catches that attention, you won't see it. You're absolutely right. Yeah. You're absolutely right. I know mine did a little bit on a couple kaiju podcasts I listened to.
Mm-hmm.
The one, Operation Kaiju Shield. You know, you put giant monsters in the Vietnam War. You know, that's just the sort of thing people were talking about. I was like, ooh, hello, fans.
Well, two things that sort of with that. You have a kaiju audience and you have a war audience.
Yeah, which is hitting both.
And so that's the thing. When you're making a comic and you're thinking about the marketing of it and how you're going to sell it, think about what's on your table and think about if someone's walking by, what's the title, what's the art image, because that's what's selling it. I don't care who you are. I don't care what's on the inside. The cover is what's going to make somebody stop.
Oh, damn right.
So what does the title say to them? What does it tell them immediately? And what does the image tell them immediately? And that's where things like public domain aspects come into play, because like we do, for example, a book called The Legend of Oz, The Wicked West. People know what Oz is. Even though if they don't know what the hell we're doing with it, they'll look at it and they'll go, Oz? Is that Dorothy? What is that?
Yeah, what's happening here?
And you get
here?
Them to stop.
Yeah.
Versus just some completely made up thing. So one thing that creators should be aware of is that public domain allows you to use things that you can't do with Marvel and DC. You can't use Spider-Man or Batman. Nope. But yes, you can use Marie Antoinette. Yes, you can use Frankenstein. Yes, you can use Dracula. Yes,
Cthulhu. It's a big
Cthulhu,
one. Yeah,
exactly.
Big, huge one there.
You can use things that exist in the public consciousness, but do it your way. And that way, when people walk by, they go, oh, you have a Cthulhu book? Cool. Let me see what that is, because in their head, they know what it is. Or they know history in some cases. We sell Marie Antoinette because it's historical fiction. And people are like, oh, damn, I love that history of that time. What is this book?
Or what's the one? Harriet Tubman, Vampire Killer.
Right, exactly.
That's one, too. You know, automatically, like, sold, at least to me. I'm like, I'm history buff and also vampires. Yes.
Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. I mean, it's...
That, too? Yeah.
You're using things to bring awareness to who you are and what you do. And then right next to that is your original thing that no one knows what the hell it is. But you put that right next to your public domain item. And then you can say, so this is the public domain thing, and it's Dracula and whatever and blah, blah, blah. I also write this original thing about blah, 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 blah. You throw your spiel in there.
Yeah.
And then hopefully you get them to, you know, buy both, of course. But at least you're like, even if they go back to the public domain thing, make sure you've got an ad in the back of your book for that other thing that you showed them, so that when they're done with that public domain thing, they go, oh, well, that was good. What else does this guy write? Oh, he's got a thing about the Wild West, whatever. Let's check it out. And
yeah,
then, you know, you make the sale on your website.
Yeah. Oh, I hope fans, listeners, because I have a bunch of fans who want to be in comics or like diving into it, or also creators too, people at, you know, Marvel, DC, and also other companies that listen to the show, hopefully take some knowledge. That's why I wanted you on the show, because you're fucking filled with knowledge. It's brilliant.
Filled with something.
That's open, though. Peripheral of jokes, Tom. A peripheral of jokes right then and there. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to be nice today. I got beat to shit yesterday with cars, so I'm kind of like, nice guy, Dakota. Karma needs to be reinstated, I guess. But, man, it just throws me away with that, because I think you're going to be doing this for the rest of your life. I see this happening.
Well, unless I sell it all to Disney and they give me, you know, $4 billion, and then I'll go do something else.
Is there a price? Do you have a price?
I'll take $4
billion. $4
billion? $4 billion's okay.
You know, Lucas took $8.
I might go $3.
Do I'll five. Go three. Go, I'll go
three.
Five.
I'm happy with three. I like the number three.
Yeah.
And then you take three and you add billion behind it. I'm good with that.
I think that's almost anybody.
Yeah. So
like
so
three
Disney,
billion.
Talk to me. We can make it work.
I can see that. Disney.
The only thing I won't sell, I'll tell you this though. The only thing I would not sell, even if I sold Big Dog Inc. as an entity, an entire
yeah,
thing,
yeah,
with all of the IP of that went with it. The only thing I would not sell out is Critter.
That's really?
It. I would keep Critter.
Why?
Because everybody asks me all the time, like, what's your favorite book? Because I write, I don't know, 11 different books.
I don't know how you do it.
What's the favorite book that you write? And it's always Critter. I love superheroes. You know, when I grew up, it was superheroes. I was the same way. I was Wonder Woman and Batman and all that kind of stuff. We all start there. That's fine. So when I started to write, it was very natural for me to start with a superhero book because I understood the genre. And I think that... I enjoy writing the character so much that to just kind of wipe it away and let somebody else do it. It's the only book that no one has of mine that no one has written in any capacity.
Really?
Yeah.
Out of all of them, that's
all of
it.
Them. Every other book has had some form of writing help in one way or another, whether it's just like a little one shot extra or whatever. You know, even Penny for Your Soul. I had an issue written by Pat Shand. He did, or not, sorry, not Pat Shand, C.W. Cook.
Oh.
He did just a one shot for me. It was a this Joan of Arc special thing, and I wrote some of it that was in there because I needed some of it written a specific way. The rest was C.W. Pat Shand. God, I'm not gonna remember who they are. Pat Shand and Keith Thomas and Libby Rich. They wrote one shots for Critter, as far as expanding the universe. Like they were different characters. They did Cricket and Slipstream and you know whatever Rookie. So they expanded the universe through one shots. But as far as the actual Critter story, like they didn't get to touch the Critter story. Like nothing that they did touched the Critter story.
Oh, shit.
So the main Critter story that goes, you know, from beginning to end is all me, and I don't want anybody to ever be in that, even within the context of what they wrote on the side. I had my fingers in the pudding, being like, well, we need to kind of do it this way, because I can't have it muck up what I'm doing over here.
It's your baby.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
is 100% your baby.
Yeah, yeah. So you know, so that would be it. So it's 3 billion and you can have everything but Critter.
I'm gonna laugh my ass off if someone, some company comes, HBO Max gives you a call saying, hey, I could definitely see your books on HBO. We want Critter. And that's it. And for how much? How much? A billion starting out. Do you, you won't sell? Like, that's just, no. I respect
no.
that, sir. Because
no.
mine, I don't think you could buy any of mine. Young Power would be maybe that one. I don't know. Like, part of me is like, as a creative, especially in like film and shit like that, I want to see it come to life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm a sucker sometimes for seeing that sort of. Every time I get a new page in, I have the biggest grin on my face whenever you get a page in. Like, do you feel that same way when like
it's
script is like,
it's Christmas
there? Yeah,
it's Christmas.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, dude, I got this page looks awesome. Yeah, it's great.
Even just promotional art is like, holy shit, because I'm creative lead on all my stuff. That was part of the contract. That was in there. It's like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
And so I have to approve everything or give my ideas for posters, stuff like that.
Yep, yep.
Whenever that comes out, because I think I just got a text about one poster, a couple posters coming out this week. So whenever that happens, like, I'm always like just looking at, like, why is Dakota so happy? Did he smoke something? Or like, what's happening here? He's got like a huge deadline coming up. What's going on?
No, he got some art.
Yeah.
Some art came in.
It's like, do I print it? I just would love to be able to own something where I just have like printed stuff all over the place, something to work. And it sounds so self-cockish, but it's really something I think as comic writers we understand a little bit. And I've talked
totally.
To some other people.
Well, anybody that,
like,
creates, anybody that creates
yeah.
understands when it becomes a thing, it's exciting.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Even if it's just like, oh, it's printed, it's a book now, instead of being files on a computer.
Yes.
It's just cool. That's,
oh,
that's
God.
It.
There's my buddy Andy, and I'm completely jealous. Andy Poon. I don't know if you've ever seen him on social media when I talked to him. I talked to him on the comic show years ago, and we've been friends ever since. He may or may not be working on a book right now.
Yeah.
And he does the art. He designs the suits for. He does the concept art suits for, the CW shows.
Okay.
Right. And then he also did stuff for Predator movie, and he did stuff for a few other projects. He's right now on Magic the Gathering for animation.
Okay.
And you know, we've seen his work come to life and stuff like that. I asked him, I was like, "What is that like?" It was off record. Like, how do you compensate? Like, what is that like, that feeling? He's like, man, it is, as you specifically said, Christmas.
Yeah.
Because he gets to see this shit. He designs it, turn it in, they build it, and see it on TV.
Yeah.
You know, and then it becomes a pop culture hit. Like, your stuff is such a big hit, too. I don't know how the hell you do it with Kickstarter, because I wanted to talk about that with Kickstarter
sure,
with you,
yeah.
because that is a pain in the ass world, I've heard.
Yeah, I mean, it can be. It's,
yeah.
it's... There's a lot of tricks to it, but it's also probably the most transparent creative medium that there is, because comics really are not very transparent.
Nope.
They're easy once you understand them, but to get in, there's a lot of sort of layers that you kind of have to break through.
Mm-hmm.
Kickstarter is just, hey, I'm making a comic book universe, and it's about, you know, this guy who races a motorcycle underwater. There, that's it. And I need money to make the comic book.
Yeah.
And that's it. And then people will decide if they want to make that happen or not. So The tricks to Kickstarter are, you know, you have to be able to show them what the hell the thing is. So you do have to put some money into it before you ever even launch your book. Because if you don't have covers, if you don't have interior art, if you don't have something to show the people what this thing is going to be, you have precisely zero chance of funding your book. In fact, there was a Kickstarter not long ago that literally had, oh, it wasn't a Kickstarter, it was some other funding thing, but same idea, crowdfunding. And it had absolutely zero production in it. It was just, this is what it's about, this is who's doing it, give us some money. Like, no art, no concepts, no, there was nothing to see. And I'm like, and it actually got four backers, which is bizarre. But they were probably friends or something, you know, because there's no reason to back something that doesn't show you what you're getting.
Yes, because you could easily back it, and then all of a sudden the art's shit.
Exactly.
Or it's a terrible storyline, and you're like, oh, I was promised this.
Yeah.
False promise. It's like a terrible, it's like catfishing on Tinder.
Correct.
But on Kickstarter, so you...
Yeah.
God, did we? I think I just created something.
So, yeah, I know, right?
Catfish on Kickstarter. It's a whole new thing. Season 8 or whatever the hell, they're on a catfish. What is it? We moved to Kickstarter now. What?
Yeah.
We go to fans who have been disappointed. That would probably sell for like a mini short on YouTube.
And there are Kickstarters that fund that are, well, I won't say never, but take sometimes years to be produced. I see people all the time that are like, dude, I backed this thing in like 2017 and it's like still not here. There are big names, large comic book names that I really want to just kind of shout out right now who, you know, took 3 years to put their book out.
Oh, I have an idea.
Okay.
A couple of them.
So,
yeah,
you know,
there's a couple, yeah.
So there's a couple things to understand here with Kickstarter. Number one, always remember as a backer that shit happens. So, you know, there's a reason guys are on Kickstarter usually. It's because they're one-man operations. They, you know, they don't have Warner Brothers behind them to make these things. Whatever. Cut them a little slack if things don't go perfectly during the campaign or during fulfillment of getting the books to you. Now, that's not to say that you should just ignore that the thing doesn't exist 2-3 years later. That's crazy. But like in my case, I actually had a backer or a project that we did where the book was basically done. We actually had a printer back out on us.
What?
Like the printer was like, nah, see ya.
Well, that's number step that you desperately need.
Exactly,
like number
know,
four
right?
on the
so
step.
So it's kind of like, oh crap. So that book got super late because we had to go find another printer to do this book. You know, sometimes artists get sick. Sometimes, you know, things happen to slow down the process, unfortunately. But it's a real thing. And anyone going into Kickstarter or Indiegogo or whatever as a backer, just understand these are independent creators. They are often doing this stuff out of their garage or whatever. And cut them a little slack. But, you know, after a year or so, you know, you can probably start to get a little pissed off. Once you're talking about 2 and 3 years, it's like,
is it dead?
What just happened here? Yeah.
Yeah.
And,
what's going on?
Yeah. So cut people some slack. Like I've backed some Kickstarters that have come in late and everything. I'm like, you know what? As long as I'm hearing from the creators, like, hey, dude, we did a thing, and you know, this is the problem. Like, we just posted a thing. We're late on Penny for Your Soul. We had the colorist; her computer literally just exploded, and so colors were just not happening for a long time. We had to get her a new computer. She had to get all her Photoshop reset up. You know, all that kind of stuff had to be redone. So we lost a lot of time, and we just made a post about it. Like, sorry guys, you know, but you know, we had technical difficulties and we're a little behind, which happens. Most people understand all of that stuff, but there are those that are just like, oh my God, I can't believe you're not perfect. I'm like, well, you know, listen, Doomsday Clock is 2 years late. Okay.
That was my number one fucking
Doomsday
book
Clock
series
from
that.
DC Comics is 2 years behind schedule. So cut the indie guys a little slack.
I honestly forgot that book existed for
everybody
a minute.
Did. Everybody did.
And I heard it was good when it finally wrapped up.
I don't know. I can't help you with. But
I know, and I'm like,
know, even Marvel and DC, they have problems.
Yes, they do.
And so why would you expect indie guys to work on a perfect playing field? Because it's
well, that's
possible.
A whole conversation of we live in this world where it's on the man now,
mm-hmm.
and you have it, you're in a snap, it's good, it's right there. You know, fuck. You got so many streaming services.
Yeah.
You got so many podcasts, to say the least. You got that. You're like, oh, I don't like this. Tune into this. YouTube, TV shows, movies itself. You have so many on-demand and books you can just pull up digitally now.
Yeah.
Which is a pain in the ass for us. But there's so many of that stuff happening that I think when that happens, that inner side where those people who are 100% on the fucking go, they have their thing with them all the time, they never have to wait for anything. And people in their 30s and 40s that are this way too, I've met those people before.
Mm-hmm.
That when they don't get it, they flip the fuck out. Sort of thing, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, when that happens, I don't understand those people.
Well, and
I really don't.
You have guys like, for example, Brian Polito, who has a team of people doing all of his Lady Death stuff, and they're on it. They're on it. But he's got like a dozen people as a team, as Coffin Comics, doing Lady Death Kickstarters. So they're fast. They're on it. They're efficient because they've got a team of people.
And if we're going solo,
and you can't compare anyone else to Brian Polito.
Oh God, no, no. Okay?
Not to Brian. Not to the brand. Not to the team. Because over here on my side, Big Dog Inc., there's me. There's also me.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of help from Jesse.
Yep.
And then there's me. Yeah. So that's not exactly the same as a team of people
it's
doing
not
all the stuff.
12 people.
Right.
You know, multiple personalities can only count for one here.
Exactly. So, you know, so and now part of that is a problem because things slow down because there's me. And in that regard, I have to now look at myself and say, okay, Big Dog Inc., how do we better our infrastructure? And the way to do that is to have people come in and be like, okay, I'm going to help you do social media. I'm going to help you do shipping, whatever it happens to be, so that I can maintain my, because I write everything. I have to write the stuff. I have to edit the stuff. I have to, you know, find the artist. I have to do all that kind of thing. So what I need to do as Big Dog Inc. is start to rebuild my infrastructure, because I used to have help with shipping. When I was married, I had my wife.
Yeah.
We had Eric Hoffman, who was killed in a car accident a couple years ago. You know, we had people that were helping us do things, and that's why we were moving faster. But since the divorce, and I've been bouncing back and forth Midwest to West and moving around, I've not had a home base to just say, okay, we're building here. And this is the infrastructure. We have people now coming in to help do this. And that's the next step for us, is now that the Kickstarters are successful, basically every time we are successful, now the next step is to, okay, how do we get the books out faster? How do we get the shipping done faster? You know, shipping should be done within no more than a couple of weeks, you know.
At least,
without any real problems.
Hmm.
But when it's me having to do it, that means every time that I'm shipping 100 packages, I'm not writing, I'm not doing. So I need to build this infrastructure where I have people doing the things that I don't need to do. Social media, we need to do social media, but I don't need to do it. Somebody else can do that for me. Somebody else can understand. We have a Kickstarter. We need to post the link. We're doing a con. We need to post the information. This. Somebody else can do that stuff.
And all the algorithms, all that sort of shit too. Someone who, because you can do it, but whether or not you can do it right,
because
I've had to sit and learn that stuff over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And all this other stuff too, because having to sell myself as a product.
Sure.
Everything like that. That sounds really ho-ish. But besides that, so yeah, that it all, there's so many cogs in the machine that have to go.
Yeah.
And if you're just a one cog, some machines have that,
everything,
you know,
slows down.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
It's, you can't, you got to also make it so your healthy mentality too, because I've found that one out in the recent, talked about it on the show and stuff like that before. So you have to make sure you balance it with yourself, of like, okay, I do need a break.
Yes. Oh, for sure.
I do need all this. What is your break? What is like the Tom break sort of thing?
Generally, it's...
That look showed me that there's none.
There's not much. Yeah. I mean, generally, it's just TV. You know, it's just put something on or watch a movie or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm a big movie guy, and I try and... I don't just try and... The problem with me is that I used to just watch movies and just like, hey, that was a good movie, whatever. I enjoyed it. But now that I'm a writer, and I've been a writer professionally for 10 years, I watch a movie for different reasons. I watch a movie for how is the cinematographer and the director, how are they showing me this scene? What is the dialogue, and does it make sense? Does it flow right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's a lot less sort of popcorn enjoyment from a movie for me now. And you know, I have to really go to my 8-year-old and watch, you know, my 8-year-old self and watch a Godzilla movie to be able to just be like eating the popcorn, loving what I'm seeing, you know.
Yeah.
But when I'm watching something like real, a lot of my head just kind of goes towards the construction of what I'm seeing, versus just I'm going to watch this for the fun of it. Now, if you watch things like dumb comedies, you know,
you're fine. Yeah.
Fast Times at Ridgemont High or whatever, then you're just there. You're just there for a laugh. But if you're watching drama or horror or things that really use cinematic elements as far as their visuals and so on, my head will kind of, even though I'm not writing my stuff, I will kind of be observing what they did and how I could potentially translate that, you know, back into what I do, because comics are a visual medium, and a lot of what I do is very cinematic in its beats and the way that it goes through. I everything that I know about writing comics came through osmosis of reading comics for basically my whole life. I virtually failed English, not because I was necessarily bad at it, because I didn't care. I you know, school, I didn't care about anything school, but for English, I'm like, what? Why am I reading Gulliver's Travels? Who cares?
Will
no
this
one
be
cares?
Useful to me? Yeah, and then exactly. Like future years, like,
yeah. Oh shit, I'm a writer. Oh, yeah. God, what happened?
You
yeah.
idiots.
The irony of that is failing English and then becoming a writer professionally for your career is the irony is just unbelievable. But
people are turning in their graves right now,
yeah,
like Alfred
right?
Hitchcock, like, he soiled me, now he's one of me.
That's correct. Yes. So yeah, I you know, I like to, and that's the thing is, I don't mind even deconstructing what I'm seeing. Like, it doesn't bother me, but it does mean that when I come out of a lot of these movies, I'm usually not the hype. I mean, I'm not in the hype machine. Like, oh my God, this is such a great. I'm like, was it really?
Yeah.
Let me talk to you about a couple of things and tell you why it wasn't great. But there's a lot of people who just go in and they're just like, it's a popcorn movie. I'm enjoying whatever it is, and that's fine. Go do it. But then the reality is that if you really examine some of this stuff that are billion-dollar movies, these are pretty bad movies.
Yeah, you know? I'll be honest with you. Yes. Yes. You have no idea how much all of that I related to. As a guy who studied and works in practical effects, writer, actor, cinema, done cinematography, studied that for a while, photography, all this sort of stuff like there, I look upon it the same fucking way. It's the same thing. Like, I look upon it and people are like, oh, this was so good. Yeah. It's like, but that 8-year-old, that childhood self, I've said it so many times on the show, you got to keep that childhood self.
You have to. Yeah. You have to.
Because.
For sure. Somehow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It takes a lot of work.
Yeah.
But.
It's like, even for me, for like all these superhero movies.
Yeah.
I can enjoy them for what they are because I have that 8-year-old, like, oh, look, it's superheroes.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I get it.
Yeah.
But they're not great movies.
No.
They're just not.
There's
some are better
yeah.
than others, obviously. And I do like some of them quite a bit. Like, I still think that Captain America the First Avenger, I still think that's probably the best of all of the Marvel movies. That is 100% my favorite of all of them.
It's such a different vibe.
Yeah,
it's such
totally.
A different everything. It's so separate. It's weird.
Yeah.
It's like the Iron Man movies. It's so separate. I rewatched Iron Man 1 the other day. It was on TV.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, let me sit down and watch this. I need a break here. It's the end of the night. About to go to the gym. Maybe, I guess, Iron Man's going to give me help. Or hyped up.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm watching the movie. And I'm like, how the fuck did we get to Guardians of the Galaxy from Iron Man 1? What? He's like in his sleeping with a reporter and stuff. And you're like, okay. All right. But I grew up on Iron Man. That was my hero sort of guy. So the scene that was the child itself coming out sort of thing.
Sure.
And those movies are conversations in itself. That's a whole episode.
Absolutely.
But I heard you talking about it. You already mentioned it too on the show. Godzilla movies.
Sure.
I have people yell at me, like, oh, the storyline shit. Oh, how do you rewatch the older ones? How do you have, like, because I got most of them on Blu-ray.
Yeah, yeah.
And they told me, how do you do all that sort of stuff? Childhood self. Because I can easily, if I want to pinpoint, like, okay, Godzilla versus King Ghidorah. I could pinpoint that time travel fucking movie so damn hard. If I'm thinking of the right one, right? It was all the time travel and they had the people from the future come in.
Well, that's the time travel one is the remake. It's the Heisei era. Godzilla versus King Ghidorah, or excuse me, you're correct. Godzilla versus King Ghidorah is the time travel movie.
Yeah.
If you go back further into Showa, it's just Ghidorah the three-headed monster.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So yes.
Okay.
Correct.
I was thinking. I was like, wait, I'm wrong. No, oh my God.
No, you're correct. You're correct. You're correct.
All right, I was like, oh shit, my fandom. it burns. So you have to, like, take that mentality, look upon it, and that. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, because that's why you're really watching it. Are you watching the critique? No. Are you really all the YouTuber at heart, I guess? Yeah, but do we want to be? No.
Like, Godzilla we can sing critique. Godzilla movies are not designed to be Godfather.
No, no.
It's not their purpose.
I've actually said it to somebody once.
Yeah, it's not their purpose. You have to understand what the movie's purpose is, first and foremost. What is the purpose of this thing?
Yeah.
It's like you go back and look at the Friday the 13th movies. Those are garbage.
Oh, yeah.
But we still like to watch them. It's true. They're still just fun, dumb things.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where the Godzilla movies, and you go back into the 60s and 70s stuff, it's just dudes in rubber suits knocking down models. But, you know, it's escapism. It's not real. It's not supposed to be real.
No.
Which is, you know, it's kind of the weird thing with, like, the new movies, the 2014 especially, it tried to be, quote-unquote, real. 2014 did not succeed for me. It was not a success.
I'm with you on that one.
I love the world building. I love the first, 30 minutes with Bryan Cranston and all that.
Yeah.
The world building was great. The direction, the pacing, the stupid army man story just was like, this is boring as hell, guys. What are we doing?
But King of the Monsters made me eat my heart out.
King of the Monsters was
holy
great.
Shit.
Anybody who doesn't like King of the Monsters, honestly, now I will admit, King of the Monsters is a fan film. It is as much Rogue One as anything else. It is a fan film.
It's true. It is true.
And I admit it 100%. But so what? He checked off all the proper boxes. And for me, it was the most balanced human to monster, scenes. Of really any Godzilla movie. There was, you had Mothra like in the first 10 minutes of the movie.
Oh, first 4 minutes.
You had Godzilla as the recap in the first few minutes. Then you're Mothra, and then you're. Now, you did have the weird bad guy trope of, we're going to try and do this, but we have to be bad to do it.
That's classic monster stuff.
But that's just monster stuff. Yeah, exactly. If you're looking for you like James Bond movies, right?
Yeah.
All these guys are just trying to take over the world with a nuclear missile.
It's
like,
true. Or a high laser or destabilizing politics. That's correct. Like, it's the same. We all know what you have to have it to keep the story. You got to have that thing in there that keeps the story moving along.
I don't know how much deeper you need to be going in a Godzilla story, I don't know what people are looking for. I hear the complaints all the time. They're like, it was a dumb story. I'm like, well, tell me what you're looking for. There's no answer. There's never an answer.
That's it. That's the thing. You can't, because you eat your heart out if you hate it, because you know what? They set up Godzilla versus Kong. They have all these, which, by the way, a huge Kong fan, too.
Yeah.
That, I can't, I got to ask you a question about that, too.
Sure.
Kind of dive into comics, but it's fine. It's the show, we're all over.
No, it's good.
How do I best put this? Are you a fan? Did you see the leaks that came out?
I did.
Godzilla versus Kong. Yeah,
I did.
All right.
I couldn't hold back. I had to click the link.
So did I. Yep. And we'll start off easy.
I'll just say that it makes me nervous.
We may be
talking about different leaks. Are we talking about the toy leak?
Yes.
Okay, that makes me nervous.
Why?
We don't want to drop the spoiler here, but it looks weird.
Hey, folks. Dakota here with a little bit of an ad break for you guys today. Do you guys like reading comics? Obviously, if you listen to the show, you do. What the fuck am I talking about? Then you guys, if you're in Arizona, which a good majority of the fan base is, shout out to the ones in Canada, though, you guys can go to Drawn to Comics in Glendale, Arizona, located at 5801 West Glendale Avenue in Glendale, Arizona. I gotta say, folks, I've been going here for a long time now. I've been to a few different comic book stores in Arizona in my 6 years of living here so far, and this may change due to the recording nature, but whatever. So I love going to Drawn to Comics. I really do. Ken, who runs it, is amazing, fucking laid-back dude. He's a wonderful guy. He's been on the show, ladies and gentlemen, before. And it's a really fun place to pick up the book. So Drawn to Comics in Glendale, Arizona. Get yourself a box, Go in, maybe just check it out. It's a fun place to escape into. All the workers there are fucking wonderful folks. They really are. It's just like family at this point. At least they're for me. And it's a fun world to go into. There's collectibles there. There's toys. There's comics. And you just get your box and reserve some books and whatnot. We've had people on the show who've written and drawn comics, Go in and pick up their work, folks. Jesus Christ. It ain't that difficult. So go to Drawn the Comics in Glendale, Arizona, folks. You guys can check them out also on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Thanks, everyone. Now back to the show. I was going to say Bearded Kong.
Oh, that's a different one. See, that's a different one.
No, I'm... We're saving that one.
I have not heard the Bearded Kong.
You haven't seen that from the promo art?
I have heard about it, but I have not stumbled across it yet.
He looks cool.
Okay.
It's one of those things where you're like, bearded gorilla?
Yeah.
But he, I guess it's like kind of great, but he's like old man. I guess sure. They got to show that he's older.
They got to show that he's aged.
Yeah. How do you show his age? Beard.
Yeah, beard. All right. Beard and gray hair.
Yeah, even Colin can grow a better beard than I can. Mm-hmm. God damn it. Like, all right, fair.
I've not seen that, but I'm okay with that concept, I think.
He looks metal.
I'm sure it's fine.
It's like gray too, a little bit too, yeah. So maybe Lightning Con. Yeah. Hopefully. The other one of a certain... God, dude, I want to just talk. We talked... Fuck it. If you know what, go forward 5 minutes, folks, at least.
Spoiler alert.
Mechagodzilla.
Yeah. It makes me nervous.
Yeah, because are they ruining what the world is? Yes. Am I fine with a fucking aircraft? Or not aircraft. Am I fine with aircraft carrier flying that's like a jet? Yeah. Am I okay with the Ready Player One Mechagodzilla? Yes. Am I okay with him now being a Godzilla vs. Kong? No. Because that's what that looked like to me.
Ultimately...
This could be a fake, like the Transformers storylines or so many levels.
Well, there's multiple levels to this. Number one is it had to happen. Not Mechagodzilla.
Oh, it's like, what?
But it had to happen. It had to be Kong and Godzilla are fighting, and then something else shows up, and they team up to...
It's called Destroya Biollante, sir. That's how you do it. That's what the... No,
but using Mechagodzilla, assuming this is what it is, based on what we saw on this toy leak... I mean, we already in King of the Monsters. There's already the newspaper things that said they're building mechanized kaiju things on Skull Island.
Yeah,
so on. So that's they built that right into King of the Monsters.
But then experimenting with genes of kaiju.
Well,
too.
And my expectation, honestly, was Mecha King Ghidorah. That's where I thought it was going to go because you've got the head sticking around. You know.
Yeah.
I've always talked, I think we've always talked about Mechagodzilla through these things as they were building this world, and most people were like, it doesn't really fit what they've built.
With
all the monsters, all the radiation ideas, the Earth defenders, and so on and so on. It doesn't really fit. So I'm kind of concerned that they're just sort of literally now jumping the shark for this quote unquote last movie because there's no Godzilla after this. I mean the license runs out.
Toho, it's true, yeah.
Toho is making their own new Monster cinematic universe. World. So yeah. The only monsters that come out of this are Kong and all of the Titans, you know, that were introduced in the last movie.
Yes.
That is your Monsterverse going forward, barring a legendary contract with Toho.
Yeah.
There is no Godzilla, there is no Rodan, there is no Mothra. None of that will exist in the Monsterverse going forward until there's a new contract. So I kind of feel like they felt like they had to go out strong with something really big in order to, you know, make it viable for Toho to go, okay, yeah, we'll let you do more.
You could have
because Kong, honestly, it failed at the box office. Let's just be real. It failed at the box office based on expectations. I mean, it made less than $400 million.
Mm.
The frustrating part about that is that I'm on tons of Godzilla boards, like on Facebook and stuff.
Oh, you and me both, actually,
and
yeah.
I'm watching people, yeah, we're on some of the same boards. And I'm watching people going like, I can't watch this movie. The critics say it's terrible. I can't watch this movie. It says that there's too much human in it. I can't watch this movie. It seems like it's all monsters. Like, it's all just this contradictory nonsense. Guys, if you like Godzilla... Go see the movie.
Yeah, you know what you're getting into.
Because here's what happens. If you go and see it, it makes money, which means you get more movies. If you don't go and see it, it makes less money, which means you don't get more movies. So this is kind of where it is. And if you're going to sit there and be complaining about too much people, some of the best Godzilla movies have the least amount of monster time in them.
Name two.
I have to think about this chart that I saw. Invasion of the Astro Monster is
fair.
Is mostly people talking until you get to the end.
Yeah.
I got to think about this chart because there's actually a really great chart that came out because when 2014 came out, people were like, "Well, there's not much Godzilla in the movie. He keeps switching away," and then this chart came out with all of these movies that showed everything by monster. In fairness, I think it's actually Godzilla appearances, not monster appearances. So, like, Rodan doesn't count towards time versus Godzilla. I'm not sure how that played out. But if you looked at the chart, the movies that had the most Godzilla were kind of the weaker movies. Like, there's tons of monster stuff in Godzilla vs. Megalon. It's not a great movie. There's a lot of monster stuff. So you're kind of like, oh, Megalon's blowing shit up, and Godzilla's sliding on his tail. And,
yeah,
you know, like, it's ridiculous fun. But from a story standpoint, what the hell is Seatopia? What are they doing? Like, none of it makes any sense. If you go down the sliding scale, a lot of them are Showa movies. Well, obviously, because that's most of the movies. Mm. And you start to see that there was cool stories built around the monsters. But the actual screen time for the monsters was lower. But you were still engaged because it was cool science fiction. There's aliens invading.
It's true.
And whatever. So you can make a cool movie with a cool Godzilla or monster movie with a lot of people as long as the people part is interesting. Army Man and his nuke in 2014 was not interesting. And so that's why it fell apart.
Yeah, I know. We'll end this Godzilla talk because I know fans probably like, what the fuck? but we've talked about it plenty of times. I had people from Godzilla stuff on both shows before. And shout out to you, Alan. Good friend. Mm-hmm. Is nothing can be as bad as those animes.
Oh,
nothing.
You know, here's the thing I'll say about the animes.
Don't tell me you like this. Don't do this to me.
What I'll tell you is this. They are not bad animes. From a story standpoint, from an animation standpoint, they are not bad animes.
Okay.
They are terrible Godzilla animes.
Yes. Okay, yes. I have never thought about it that way, but 100%. As soon as you finish it, I'm like,
just
right.
Think about the anime. Take the word Godzilla out. Put in any monster term to represent Godzilla, and suddenly you just have a good anime.
Yeah, yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. God damn it. I've always thrown so much shade. They even threw shade at it in this.
They're not good.
What was it? Someone, Radam put it on an island. Did you ever see the 3D animated cartoon? It's so brilliant. Mm-hmm. And it's all translated from the roars. It was a really fun comedy thing. It's the island of unmade Godzilla movies.
I've heard about this. Yeah.
Watch it. It's okay. So good. Because you're like, holy shit. And then like at the end, Rodan is like, they're all leaving. And he's like, shakes his leg. The anime discs fall out for all three of them. And he's like, all right, just going to walk away. I'm going to be like, yes. Nice. Yes. It's like 10 to 15 minutes.
Okay.
So worth the time. It's just, I don't remember who did it. Shout out to that creator. They put so much time and effort into that 3D animation.
Cool.
Yeah, it's worth it.
Yeah.
Man. So we are kind of coming in the end of the show here.
Sure.
Because, I mean, including the recording from before. We're almost about an hour here.
All right.
And, man, Tom, like, where can people find your stuff? Because I think we got it, like, for Big Dog. Yeah. Where can they find everything for you to check it out?
Because so we talked about it. Yeah, we used to be in comic shops, but...
you just made it sad. What the shit?
Yeah, after the Aspen split, we basically have just gone straight to customers. So we are doing Kickstarters. We have our website, BigDogInc.com. It's I-N-K, Big Dog Inc. That'll take you right to our web store. We do a weekly show on Facebook on the Comic Book Shopping Network, which is a Facebook page called the CBSN, Comic Book Shopping Network.
I get your notifications every night almost.
Beautiful. Yeah. Look that up. We do a show every Wednesday night. We'll do one tonight, 10 o'clock Eastern time. We do 2 hours. We sell stuff direct to everybody. And we do, you know, the occasional Comic-Con. But basically everything is social media. It's Twitter and Instagram is BDI Comics. We're on Facebook. You can find me too. I mean, I'm happy to friend you up on me, but we have a Big Dog page, fan page with like, you know, 30,000 people following us. And that's really it. I mean, it's direct from us to you at this point. And right now we have a Kickstarter that's actually running, which is Scheherazade, the return of our public domain, Scheherazade.
Yeah, that is true.
We've taken Scheherazade and done something with her to, you know, kind of expand on her character versus all of the stories that she told, 1,001 Arabian Nights and all that. We're creating a character for Scheherazade, which is very genre mashing. You know, our inspiration for Scheherazade was the visuals from Sucker Punch. It was just like, what am I looking at? You know, but hopefully at the end of the day, you know, the story ties up a little bit better than, you know, what Sucker Punch did. So,
there was a story in that movie.
I mean, maybe.
Yeah.
So if you want to check that out, go to Kickstarter right now. Just type in Scheherazade, Scheherazade. It's kind of a fancy spelling. Or you can type in Geisha in King Arthur's Court. That's sort of the subtitle. You'll find us. And you can back it right now. We've got cool variant covers, and you can get in for as little as $9. It's free shipping on everything. And yeah, that is our primary distribution right now is Kickstarter. Mm. And then from there, it's whatever's we put on the website and do on the live shows and all that kind of stuff.
I dig it, man.
Yeah. But that's BDI awesome. Comics, Instagram and Twitter, BDI Comics.
All right. Yeah. That's definitely where, you know what? I got to say this. You're doing a lot of dreamers' dreams right now, because I think really what I want to ask Tom is this. Is there ever a time where you think you're never going to have a story? Like, have you told all the stories you want to tell?
Not remotely. We have the 11 titles that we have now, which are, you know, in various forms of production. We just finished the last volume of Penny for Your Soul. We're still doing Critter. Scheherazade's back. Ursa Minor comes back this year. Mm. Oz comes back this year. So it's all kind of in various forms of production. As all of this is happening, I still have three books in the back of my head that are always being added to, you know, a little bit here, a little bit there. And eventually there will be enough for me to dive all the way in and say, okay, new book time. Here's a new thing. You know, like we just put out Antoinette. We just put out Princesses versus Zombies. Those are two brand new titles.
Yeah, I saw those.
So, you know, there's always more to tell. There is definitely the ending of some of these things. Like Oz has an ending for my story, mm-hmm. but that doesn't necessarily end all of our Oz stories, because once you finish that story, you still open up the doors for, you know, to do anything you want, because Oz is just an immense world with tons of characters. So if I wanted to step aside and say, like, okay, somebody else can write Oz, I can let that happen because I've told my story, you know, within that. Critter definitely has a finale.
Does it?
But we aren't even close.
Oh, you know, close. I was like, please don't drop it now you're like, Critter's ending. Like,
We're on 22, which will come out this year. And, you know, it's the old don't have that pitch where I have this 100-issue thing. No, we're definitely doing 100 issues of Critter.
Okay, hopefully. Your baby gets a lot.
We got a long way to go. Yeah. But there is, I do have in my mind an ending for her, for that story. Mm. Ursa Minor will have an ending to that story as well. There will be an ending. Penny for Your Soul has an ending. I know what these endings are. But how fast we get to them kind of varies between the different titles. I mean, obviously with Penny for Your Soul, we're running it miniseries by miniseries through the Signs of the Apocalypse.
Yeah.
There's only 7 of them. Yeah. So you kind of reach a point where we've found the end, you know. But I do know what these endings are, and we'll get to them all in good time. But there will always be another story. You know, my imagination doesn't stop just because I'm writing something else, or because something else has ended, or because I'm 75. You know, unless
old man time. I'm still
writing those booby books. You know,
is that what people call them? Or?
In a lot of cases, and that's because a lot of what you see as far as our banners and stuff, a lot of it is kind of pinup art. So while some of that and the covers, the variant covers, pinup art. So while that doesn't necessarily represent what you see on the inside, when you're at a con or whatever, and that stuff's being displayed, people are like, "Oh, that's just that stuff," and I'm like, "No, that's that pinup cover. That's that style for the art for the collector who collects that type of art. Come over here, look at the regular A retail quote unquote cover.
Yeah,
there's no TNA there. There's nothing. It's a story cover. And then look what happens when you look at the insides. Oh, look, there's no pinup art on the inside. It's a story. It's people doing, you know, what they do and throughout the story. So you kind of have to understand that the market has multiple levels and sections to it. And the more you can get yourself into all of these sections, the more opportunities you'll have to sell. But at the same time, you have that sort of pushback where if you're going to have pinup covers, you are going to have that perception that the books themselves are that too. Mm-hmm. So you just have to be prepared to, you know, fight your fight and try and make people understand that, look, the book is not the pinup art. It's just they're different, completely different things.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I got to say, that knowledge of writing, by the way, is what makes a good writer. Because if you don't know your ending, you're fucked.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're going to drown out in so many. We see it. How many times do we see it on TV shows?
Yeah.
They're just like, we have no idea what's going on. Yeah. And it's like, next thing you know, Bones and or the detective have a kid now. And it's like, well, Like, no, get out of here. Yeah. Like, all that sort of thing. You never.
It's like, look at Next Generation ended on season 7 at its peak of ratings.
Mm-hmm.
It just was like, look, we're wrapping this up, guys. We're going to do a cool ending, all of this, blah, blah, blah. Next Generation is done. They finished on a high point.
Yeah.
Always try to finish on a high point, not on your decline.
Makes me want to ask, are you going to watch Picard?
I'm interested in Picard.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a shot.
I love Discovery. Yeah. Like, I love Discovery. I'm interested in Picard, but the fact that it's just, we're starting off with a Borg again and 7 of 9, and it's just kind of like, I mean, it's fine because he's so integrated with the Borg, but I kind of would have hoped for something kind of like Discovery, like just do something else.
Yeah, but you can't really be like, here's Picard, and people are like, yeah, but if you do something new that may or may not grab people, like we were when they did the remakes with the time trial and everything like that, well, that was something new.
Yep.
That hooked us in. Yep. At least hooked me in. But I used to watch Picard all the time. Like I had a box TV in my grandparents' kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And late at night, when it would be commercial, I'd flip the channel. Back before cable. Because mm-hmm. You could just flip it. There was like channel 24 or something like that was Dragon Ball Z late at night. So yeah. I would switch between Picard and DBZ. And so I remember just sitting there every night. I'd get down there, turn off all the lights. Just static as shit. But I'm still sitting down there. I have a can of Pringles and a can of Pepsi. Mm-hmm. My grandparents house. So just sit there and watch Picard. So when they announce the show and I'm seeing all these characters come back, mm-hmm. like, yes, I want. Here is my money. Cat food? Fuck no. Picard food. That's what it is now. I'm good. Like,
yeah, I'm interested.
Yeah,
I'm interested, especially after Discovery. I really like it. So I'm game for what they're trying to do.
Mm.
And then we just got to see if it's good or not.
Sweet.
Yeah.
All right, man. We're going to end on that because
cool.
I don't want to take too much more of your time
because yeah,
you're busy. But like, if you try to like condense our schedules in a one day, it usually gives us like a brain stroke.
Yes.
So you always got to be like, well, what are you doing? Like, oh, shit. Well, a whole day, basically. This mm-hmm. is my day. It's just, I like to tell people that now because we're doing so much handling so much stuff like that. Like yeah. Tomorrow, I got to get up at 3:30 in the morning and go to a photo shoot. I got to go do, whatever. You can't really say everything that's in the schedule because one, people are going to think you're going to die, or they're going to be like, do you sleep?
A little bit.
3 hours to new doctor recommendation. I'm on the creative recommendation. 3 hours. 4, pushing it. Man, but thanks for coming. This has been a blast.
Of course, yeah. This is great.
Yeah, we always used to talk in the store all the time when I'd come in.
Yeah.
And then you guys went to digitals, all this sort of stuff going on. But I just thought about it one day. Tom's got to come on the show because you gave such good advice.
Awesome.
So thank
you,
man.
Hopes it helps whoever's listening.
It should. And if it doesn't, y'all idiots. If you don't listen, I mean, whatever. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in this episode. And any final words, Tom?
Just whatever. If you're a creator and you're listening to this, the key to creating is just keep creating.
Mm.
It doesn't matter if you're on a first draft, final draft. Just keep doing it. Create the habit of creating. And you'll be able to keep pushing yourself further and further and get better and better.
Well, you need your own show where you just give advice.
You just saw me do my own show.
I know. I'm talking TED Talk here. All right. Yeah. That's what I'm meaning here. I didn't want to say the name, but you know what it should. I was like, just say the fucking name. TED Talk. That would be amazing. I see you. Would you wear a tux?
No.
No?
This is it.
You're just going to go out and show it's right
there. It's cargo pants.
Your own t-shirt.
Cargo shorts, you got to brand yourself.
That's
if you're
true.
Not going to brand yourself, who the hell's going to brand you?
I don't, fuck yeah. That's why I'm waiting on my stuff in the mail. That's a couple of those packages.
Yeah.
I want to see you on TED Talk. Let's do this. 100% comment creating with Tom Hutchinson. Like, what? Anybody who knows you would be like, he's going on. I would tune in just to see if they would make you wear the suit or not. To be like.
There's no suits. There's no suits. That inhibits the creative process.
You say that on TED Talk. That's TED correct. Talk wanted me to wear a suit.
Or you just go out with the suit on, and then as you're talking, you just start taking it off, and underneath is your shorts and your branding.
You would have
your
so many people. I'd be like, oh my God, Tom went in the stripping. Yeah. Oh! Oh! All right, man, we're going to end the show. And everyone, all the listeners out there, thanks for tuning in. And everybody, creator or not, stay creative. And stay classy. Phoenix, Arizona, I guess I could say for this one.
Glendale,
yeah.
Just Arizona.
Yeah, you should say stay classy and a location tied into wherever it is.
Yeah.
But we'll say Glendale. Peace, everyone.